Batiste.
Show. Show, hein?
What are you saying about that?
I like that.
That's my father-in-law Wenzel made that for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Wenzel.
He's pretty good working on boats. You know, see how good he is at making okra?
Yeah.
Let's try that.
You gonna let me do that?
Okay,
you can scare me with that knife. What recipe did he use?
I don't know. He didn't tell me. He said it was top secret.
It's a little vinegar. A little vinegary. It's good.
I'm pretty dang good. Old Joe with his hunt camp grew them right there.
Oh, I gave them to him. He's going to pickle some.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what's better. Throw you a saltine cracker in there every now and then.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's a different taste in the recipe that I got.
Mm-hmm.
I do a sugar one, a sweet one, and a spicy one. That's a little different, but I do love some pickled okra.
Yeah, I like to take me a little garlic clove and put in there, and a little piece of a cayenne pepper if I got it.
Yep.
Kick it up a notch.
What else you got there?
Well, what else we got here is some cauliflower that we harvested at the expo there. And I didn't think it was ever going to make, but it finally did. And this is some white cauliflower here.
That's the white?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. Now, it takes a long time. You got to have patience growing cauliflower, don't you?
You got to have patience.
Yeah, you'll see there.
If you ain't careful, if you get too many sunny days out there, it'll start to turn yellow on you and lose its color a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you got to keep it covered up to keep the white color.
Well, some varieties do what they call wrap better than others. So this one here, you know, it wraps like that to kind of protect itself from the sun. So you ain't got as much flexibility with the white ones. Now, so if you eat them just for yourself, you might not mind a little discoloration. And then the really awesome one here is this one here called Graffiti.
Ooh, we grew this one before. Look at that.
And that's the purple cauliflower, and it is pretty.
And you know, if it's got purple in it, it's got what they call them antioxidants in it.
Anthocyanins.
Mmm, big word there.
That's right.
Purple cauliflower.
And the purple is not going to, you ain't got to worry about the discoloration as much with it because it's darker. And that's some good stuff right there.
So what we have done before is we have planted a row of each one of these.
Right.
Let me get this out here where you can see. And that makes a pretty good presentation if you plant a row each of these. So you got the white, you got the yellow, and you got the purple.
Yeah.
And you can go in there and harvest them all at one time and then kind of mix them up when you're eating. Or if you're doing a little market farm, makes a good different colors there, and it's really eye-catching. You don't see a lot of purple and yellow cauliflower.
Yeah, and so we've got all three varieties. We got the Snowball, which is the white, and then we've got the
purple
Graffiti, which is the purple, and then we've got the yellow one, which is called Flame Star. I don't have any of those here to show you,
but we've grown that one before.
On the you get 100 seeds on the Snowball. For the colorful ones, only 50 seeds. Those are pretty high dollar hybrid seeds, but they do grow really well. The purple and the yellow take a little bit longer, but you don't have to worry about them getting sunburned as much.
Well, you got a 55 day maturity on the Flame Star and the Snowball, and you got a 80 day on the
purple one takes a lot.
The purple one, 80 days, yeah.
So you can what I would recommend doing is you got your 162 cell seed tray and put you a third of one, a third of one, and a third of the other, and you have your nice little colorful mixture.
Yeah, it's definitely something. Cauliflowers, it does better when you grow them out as plants and transplant them.
That's right, that's right. And we'd like to welcome everybody to the show today. This is our
Road
by Road Garden Show, our weekly garden show where we eat a little snack, talk a little gardening, and
eat a little snack, talk a little smack.
That's right. That's right. I like that. So around here, we just got through with New Year's, and man, it was almost 80 degrees on New Year's Day.
Yep. So my garden's looking really good. We've had plenty of rain. My garden kind of sits on here, so it drains well. My lettuces are popping. I got them fertilized. My onions are popping. my English peas, my radishes. I've been eating radishes out of the garden. Everything is looking really good. Now, we talked just a minute last week about onions, about fertilization, and I mentioned something called sulfur-coated urea that you could use. Well, in the meantime, I've also thought about this right here, and this may be more readily available, but there is a fertilizer called ammonia sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one called ammonia, it's a nitrogen with calcium in it, calcium nitrate and ammonia sulfate. Now, if you're in the southern, what we call Piedmont region here, got these Piedmont soils, you want to use ammonia sulfate on your onions, if you can get it. And that is a nitrogen source with the sulfur with it, and our onions like a lot of sulfur. Now, if you're not in these Piedmont type soils and you're on up further out, you may want to use the calcium nitrate. But either you want to probably use calcium nitrate or ammonia sulfate to kind of supplement your nitrogen source on your onions.
Hmm. Yeah, that heat little wave we had there gave us some weather to be able to dry out the garden a little bit. I was able to inject some fertilizer in my lettuces and onions are really popping.
Mm-hmm.
I got my elephant garlic planted. I've got a 2-minute tip coming on that next week. We got a shipment notification that our leeks from Dixondale are on the way. We've never grown leeks before.
Got my leek spot ready.
You got your leek spot ready. I got me a little spot ready too. So we're interested in trying that. As far as New Year's, once the new year comes around, we start getting excited for spring. Even though it seems like it's a long time away, we start getting excited.
You start looking at seeds. I mean, you start looking at what tools you're going to need for the year. Just get all pumped up.
That's right. And we got all of our seeds that we have in currently on the website. If you go to our page, hosstools.com, right there in the middle of the main menu, you'll see a thing that says Premium Garden Seeds. And if you click on that, you'll see all of the subcategories there, and you can check those out. And we'll be adding new ones almost daily as we get them in and get them packed. So check back all the time. We'll see new varieties there.
We really got some interesting stuff. I just got a phone with a supplier there, and we got some good, interesting things coming down the pipeline that I'm excited about.
And one more thing, speaking of seed, our seed trays, and I'm going to say this not to try to sound like a furniture salesman on TV, but our seed trays are literally flying off the rack.
Shelf, yep.
Flying off the shelf, flying off the rack. And we're going to try our best to keep them in stock, but we can't make any promises. So this is what I would do. If you think you're going to get some of them seed trays, don't wait till spring when you're going to need them. Go ahead and get them now, because there is a possibility we could run out of them.
Oh, yeah. And we've got the potting soil. Is the very good pot, so we've talked about on the short before.
ProMix.
The ProMix, and this ProMix will do two of the 162 flats. So if you buy you a 5-pack of flats, of trays, you probably want to get you 3 packs of the pot soil, and that'll do you about 6 trays. You'll have about 1 left over, so that'll get you going. So make sure that you plan on getting you a good pot and soil, and we have those in stock too, and those are moving pretty good. When you order your seed trays, order your pot and soil at the same time.
Or you can get the kit and just get one tray in one bag and do that tray twice.
Right.
Different options there depending on what your scale is.
But just to let you know, one bag will do 2 seed trays.
That's right. 2 of the 162 cell trays. Okay. Today's main topic on the Row by Row show, I've had a lot of people on chat, on the customer service line, and on our videos asking when they should start getting their garden plot ready, how they should get it ready. You know, here we're growing food year round, so our gardens are always kind of ready, but in other areas, people might not grow a fall garden and kind of may let it grow up a little bit and then re-prepare it in spring. So we want to talk about things to think about when getting your garden ready, how to get it ready, how to break that ground and get it ready to plant.
So if you got the capability, we're going to go with the number one best scenario first, and then we'll go to 2 and then go to 3. The best way, and you need to do it now, by the way, you need to get started on this new plot. If you're doing a new plot or a new garden, you need to get at it right now. First thing you do is take your soil sample. We've talked about this before. Take your soil sample, get it sent off now to get that pH adjusted. Now, if you get this back and you get totally confused, we're here to help you. So you can give us a ring or shoot us an email and tell us what your soil sample tells you, and we'll try to help you with that. You want to get that pH adjusted now, because it takes about 3 months once you apply this lime for it to work, if you need lime. Second thing, if you have capability of a tractor and you can go in there and subsoil and hare, that is probably the best way to get your garden started. The hare works good because it cuts the organic matter up and it doesn't destroy the structure of your soil. So you can hare it good and it starts to decay in that organic matter, so you can work it this spring. The subsoiling will bust up that hard pan so that you get moisture down there and your roots grow in there. Now, the second best scenario to do.
Now, what with subsoiling, you mean running a bottom plow through there?
Not a bottom plow, but okay. A subsoiler. It's a point that goes down, and it will actually go down. They hard pull because you pull them deep. But it goes down in the soil, and you run it through there, and it busts up a little small area there of where you're going to plant. The farmers, what they'll do is they'll run that subsoiler down exactly where the row's going to go.
Okay.
In a garden situation, you can't necessarily always do that, but it does bust up that hard pan, so that your roots and water will go in there and makes it more viable to plant with.
What about the bottom plow, where you basically, you don't have to worry about chopping that grass up because you're inverting that hole?
That works well too. You got to be careful there that you don't want to turn. I've seen people turn too deep. You don't want to turn too deep. You want to turn down enough so that you turn that organic matter over and you can work soils pretty good. So if you have capability of doing that, and you know an old timer knows how to do it, because let me tell you something, you don't want to go out there with no turning plow if you don't know what you're doing, because you can make a mess. There is a trick to that. So if you got your granddaddy around or somebody that knows how to run a turning plow, that is an option, and it's a good option. But don't go out there and try unless you know what you're doing. Your tractor's got to be set up right. It's kind of complicated. But if you know what you're doing, got some help, do it. Don't turn too deep. If you can't, subsoil and hare. Or if you turn, you want to hare. That's the best scenario, number one. Now, a lot of us don't have a tractor. So you may have a little spot in your backyard that's 40 by 40 or 40 by 50 or whatever, and you don't have a tractor. There's other options you can do. You can go out there with your tiller and start tilling it up, start working on it. It's going to take you a little longer, but that's okay. That's what you got. That's what you're going to work with. You got to do that. You got to have some type of mechanical means to bust up that soil and get it started decaying so you can work it.
That's right. And I've used the tiller the last two or three years. I've kind of opened up a new garden plot, and I've used a tiller to do this. Now, the trick with this, I see a lot of people making the mistake where they'll go in and they'll just want to till it up a couple weeks before they're going to plant.
Yeah.
And you're just not going to get those grass clumps broken down enough. And what you're going to have is some bad tilth, because you're going to have a lot of chunks in there that aren't decomposed. And you're also going to have a lot more weed problems.
Yep.
So what I recommend doing is at least a month, even 2 months if you got the time, before you're going to plant your garden. And this is assuming it's grown over the grass or whatever. Go in there with your tiller and till it once a week. At least once every 2 weeks. I like to do it once a week. And that's going to help chop up that stuff. It's going to let some of those weeds grow and you kill them off. And then after you get the tilth right, then you can take the wheel hoe and just kind of keep it weed free until you get ready to plant. But you definitely want to start a month or two before, so you can get those grass clumps really nice and chopped up.
Yeah, and rotation is a big thing. Whether you're starting a new garden or you've had an existing garden and you feel like you might need to rotate it around a little bit, this is the same type of methods you would use to do that. A lot of the Amish work on a three-year rotation. So they'll let it lay what they call fallow. They'll leave it alone for 2 years and they plant it for 3 years, which is not a bad idea, because right. We're guilty, all have been guilty about over-farming or over-gardening a particular spot. When you start rotating around, you'll find out that you grow a better garden. It's hard to do sometimes, and I've been guilty of it myself.
Bruce and them that grow onions, the onion plants at Dixondale, they grow onions and cantaloupes. They use a 6-year rotation.
Right.
As far as the layout of the garden, let's talk about that a little bit. A lot of people, just because it's easy, take a big old spot, let's say a quarter acre or a half acre, and just farm the whole thing, long rows. And the problem we found with that, because this is how you used to do your garden, is it makes it really hard to rotate.
It makes it hard to rotate, makes it hard to plant, and it makes it hard to manage. So what we did a few years ago, with the old picture up here now, we busted up our garden into sections and we have walkways through it. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, it makes it a lot better for succession planting. It makes it a lot easier to rotate different plots and let one rest a little while to use cover crops. It just works a whole heck of a lot better. Now, this works for us, and we're just throwing it out there. If it can help you, that's great. If you still prefer to do it the old method and it works for you, that's fine too. But we have found these new methods with these subplots work really good for gardening.
The problem with the long rows is you've got corn planted on one side 1 year. Your only other option is to flip it on the other side, and you can only really do a 1 to 2 year rotation that way. But say if you break that big plot up into 6 different subplots, then you can do a 5 year rotation, mm-hmm, as opposed to a 2 year rotation. It's going to give you more flexibility. It's going to make it easier to manage as well, because it's not as daunting to go out there and wanting to hoe a 100-foot row. You break it up in little plots, you can tackle one plot a day. It take you 20 minutes. And you can keep your garden in a lot better shape.
Yeah, my garden, count the walkways, is about 10,000 square feet. Now, that's a lot of garden. That is more than enough, I think, for a family of four, mm-hmm, if it's managed correctly.
And the new spot we're going to push over them trees and bust out this weekend is about 10,000 square foot. It's about 120 by 90, 120 by 80. So close to 10,000 square foot. And as far as the subplot size, now your garden, you've got all your subplots are not the same size, but my kind of preferred size, maximum size, is 40 by 40. I really like that square 40 by 40. And one reason I like the square is for corn pollination, but it also just works good, yeah. Easy to manage for me. Now, I've got some that are 20 by 30 that I like as well, mm-hmm, but I don't like to go longer than 40-foot rows if I don't have to.
The example of growing some of these greens like lettuces and these mixes that we grow, a 20 by 40 is a gracious mix, you know, spot for that.
Right, that's right. We talked about doing the soil test. Another thing to consider when you're laying out your garden is what's going to need trellising. And kind of your rotation that way. So you're going to need to, we like to use the cattle panels.
We call it vertical gardening.
Vertical gardening.
So we use these cow panels that you can buy at Tractor Supply or your local farm supply place that are 16 foot long. We use the metal post and we put these up and we'll grow certain crops such as climbing cucumbers.
Mm-hmm. Pole beans.
Pole beans. Rattlesnake beans, which I guess is a classification of a pole bean. And we'll grow our butter beans that way. We'll grow a climbing butter bean on these right here.
English peas?
English peas, not as much, but same way. I have put them on the cow panels. But there's a lot of different things you can grow like this, and you're growing up, and you're saving yourself a lot of room. You're saving yourself a lot of backache when you go to harvest it. And they seem to do real well because you're getting that plant off from the dirt. You don't have quite as much disease problems sometimes.
That's right. You know what really burns my rear end?
What?
When I see people, especially on Facebook, that instead of getting them some cow panels or doing something right, they want to jerry-rig something that's going to take them all day instead of just going up there and doing it right. I seen a fella the other day, he was wanting to take him some bamboo and do all this complicated trellising, and by the time he spent all day doing that, he could have spent $40 at Tractor Supply and had it up and then had some.
Well, these cow panels will last forever. I got some I've had for years and years. I take them down and move them every year because I rotate, but they'll last forever.
They will.
And your metal fence posts, just pull them up and reuse those.
You don't need but three. I use 3 T-posts per 16-foot panel. Now, I used to use, and I think you still do, what we call them cowboy clips.
Yep.
And fence clips. them things.
They aggravate.
They are aggravating. So I went to using zip ties.
I'm not gonna use zip ties.
And it is 10 times faster to use zip ties.
Huh. I'm gonna stick my cowboy clips.
You gonna stick with your cowboy clips? Okay. I'll be done taking a nap while you're still out there. All right. And then the last thing we want to talk about as far as getting the garden ready is the composting thing. If it's, and we had a lot of people ask us, should I compost the whole thing or just compost where I'm going to plant?
There's no right or wrong.
There's no right or wrong. My suggestion there would be, if it's a new area and you need some organic matter there, it's not going to hurt you to compost the whole thing.
Right.
And mix that in and incorporate it in the soil. If it's an established garden, like ours are, we just compost where we're going to plant because our soil's in decent shape. It's continually worked. So either way there is fine. If you need that organic matter, definitely put it on the whole plot. And now it's time to get to our questions.
Mm.
And if you have any questions, definitely put those in the comments about anything we talked about or anything else, or maybe topics you want to see on a future show. Put those in the comments, and we will get to them on next week's show. We'd love to hear from you guys and what you have to say about the show and what we talk about. So our first question this week is from Andrew Michaud. And we were talking about those mixed Asian greens last week. We had some in a bowl. And he's in Georgia like we are. And he wants to know, when can he direct seed those greens and will they take a light frost?
The answer to that is yes and yes. Do it now.
Right. When can you plant them? Yesterday. Down here, you can pretty much plant them as soon as the temperature breaks in fall, all the way through spring.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a bad cold spell, they're going to take a little longer to germinate and come up.
Right.
But if you have a few warm days like we've had the last few days, they just pop. They go. They'll take a pretty good frost. You'd be surprised what they'll do. Even our lettuces will take a pretty good frost.
As long as you keep, if you're going to get a really hard frost, last year we got down to 17 a couple times, keep the ground wet and they'll be fine.
I'm amazed why more people don't grow these lettuces than what they do. We love growing our lettuces. They do wonderful. We got a great food source all during the wintertime to make you a good salad. You don't have to worry about no E. coli or none of that kind of stuff. And they grow great during the wintertime.
Yeah, they just need a little pop of fertilizer.
A little pop here and there.
To grow out fast. So the greens, the kohlrabi, like I showed you on the 2-minute tip this week, any of that stuff, if you're where you're not in risk of snow covering the ground, plant it now, succession, plant some more 2 weeks later, you're good to go. You don't have to worry about the frost getting the stuff.
So what Roman knows 9/11, he asked, he said, I'm going jihad on my squash board.
Jihad, what does that mean?
That means he's going all out on them. Yeah, he's going to war with them. I'm going jihad on squash boards. They messed me up real good. Any suggestions? BT, yellow traps, flamethrower, I don't know.
I'm not real sure what a yeller trap is.
A yellow trap is an insect trap.
Okay. So squash borers, when they are in their larval stage, you can get them with BT and spinosad. That's not going to kill the adult stage of them. And if you think you're going to have a problem, I would recommend doing some BT and spinosad early, getting that larval stage in and preventing that adult population from really developing.
Yeah, I would probably go with, in the early stage, I would probably, instead of BT, I would go with pyrethrin and neem oil. I would probably go with neem oil, then I would switch up and go to spinosad. I would rotate the neem oil, the spinosad, and then definitely you want to make sure that you got a good rotation, you aren't planting where you had a pumpkin or squash last year.
Yeah, I usually keep those cucurbits like that on a 3-year rotation. The rotation's really important. The other thing, to remove the crop debris. Those eggs and stuff will overwinter in the soil. Remove that debris once some plants are done. Remove it out of there. And then he mentioned a flamethrower. He might have been being a little bit sarcastic, but you can, after you remove that debris, go out there with a flamer and kill any of those eggs or leftover.
Yeah, also critters. Plant early. If you know you're having a problem, plant early before those insect populations get up. Plant as soon as you can and get that crop off early in the summer before your populations get out of hand. That will also help.
Yeah, yeah. Around here, we don't even try to grow any cucurbits in August and September because you just can't do it. So get them off early,
yep,
and you'll be doing good. Well, I think we're going to polish off this jar of pickled okra, and we hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight, and we will see you next week.
Get off that couch out there and get started on that garden.